game, that Pokemon game, have you been playing that a lot, Kyle?
Not so much. I started it yesterday because I gave up on Path of Exile for now, but Ian's been playing it a lot more than I have.
So I gather Path of Exile, we will come back to Pokemon Unite because you're right, I've been playing it quite a lot recently. I gather the newest Path of Exile League has not been good.
It hasn't had the best reception, no. So the gist of it is that, similar to any game that has an expansion, like, 4 times a year or whatever, power has crept a lot, and so they kind of, they cut it back, which everyone agrees was necessary, but I think they cut too many things at once. So, without going into too much detail, there's duration on flasks is kind of messed up now, because you get a quarter of the amount, I think, a quarter probably, the amount of charges from killing mobs than you did previously, and there's 40% total reduction of damage from support gems, or like pure damage support gems. So the idea was that the flasks aren't supposed to be a permanent uptime thing, you're supposed to make meaningful choices.
Yeah, right.
And then for the support gems, they just wanted to make more meaningful choices in terms of support gems. Like, there's a support gem called Elemental Damage with Attacks, and if you're an elemental attack build, you just always run it. And they're like, we want you to run things like Chain and Fork so that you're modifying the way a skill works. And so those ones weren't as affected. But I think the outcome is that, yeah, so all the builds have lost 40% of their damage, which is not ideal.
But if they all lose it, aren't they all the same then? It's just like less power overall?
I mean, I think that was the intention, right? Because they want things to be equal and you have more choices. But because Path of Exile has so many different things you can do, a lot of the niche builds that lost 40%, like they were just on the edge of having playable DPS before. And so now they've lost 40%, they're just not playable because they just can't kill things anymore.
Yeah, it's also a case of PoE not being PvP either. So when your build drops off too far in power level, like, it doesn't matter that everyone else's build's dropped because now you just can't kill the bosses you have to kill.
Yeah.
Oh, is there a lot of PoE stuff? I'm just looking at pictures of Path of Exile now and it looks very complicated.
Yeah, it's almost entirely PvE, not PvP.
Yeah.
So your power level relative to other players actually isn't that important?
Not so much. So to put it into like a numbers perspective, right? So you need 1 million DPS to clear content, which is overstating it, but it's a round number, so it's nice. Before, people would have like 10 million or 20 million DPS on like fully maxed out geared characters, which is way too much, right? You can clear everything super easily at that point. And so those builds lose 40% of their damage, and they're like, whatever, we still have 5 to 15 million DPS, it's all good. More realistically, some of the builds have like 5 million DPS, they lose 40%. That's still fine, they have like 2 million DPS left. But then you start getting some of the niche builds, which are sitting like exactly at the million DPS they needed before.
Oh yeah.
And so now they have 500,000, and it's like, well, no, you just can't do anything. And they didn't nerf monster damage or monster life or anything. So now you just get killed.
But if you're playing against the computer, like, why does it matter? I don't understand. Like, why just play on an easier mode?
I mean, I think that's part of what they're trying to address with power creep. They think that the most difficult content shouldn't be, like, so accessible. Which makes sense. But I think that, like, so the nerfing by 40% in itself is probably not an issue, right? They probably should have done something about, like, monster life regen, for instance, because there's some builds where, like, because of the 40% damage nerf, the monsters just out-regen your damage and you can never do anything.
Oh, that sucks.
Well,
so they've just, broken their entire game.
They haven't, but, like, the cases I'm describing are the extreme scenarios, because, like, you don't know anything about Path, right? So I have to...
Well, I'm looking at pictures now, and I played a lot of Diablo 3, and am I mistaken? I think it literally just looks identical.
It's pretty similar. Except D2 and D3 has legendaries, right? Is that what they're called?
Know. Oh, like, yeah, and ancient somethings, I think, as well. The orange ones.
So Path has uniques, but my understanding of day two and day three is that you eventually get to a point where the uniques or the legendaries or whatever are the best way to gear your character, which Path doesn't want to do. Path wants you to, wants like the uniques to be build enabling in some cases. Like there's one that converts lightning damage to chaos damage, which you can't get from a rare. But in terms of like DPS, they want you to be able to like progress to crafting these good rares.
And here's the other thing though. Why is power creep a problem in a primarily PoE game? Like it just seems weird. Like there's no balancing issues, right? Because it's PoE, or I don't know.
I mean, there's, I don't know how many skill gems there are. I should know. But let's just say there's 100 skill gems, right? They want people to be incentivized to play different skill gems. And I think in their manifesto, their image of the game is a lot slower than what it currently is.
Oh, yeah.
Because at the moment, it's like it's coined to clear speed meta, because you have to clear as much content as fast as you can, because the faster you clear things, the more currency you make. And then you can trade for better items, and it just scales exponentially.
Yep.
So they want to slow it down, and they're coming up with this big release for PoE 2, which I think was originally going to be pretty soon-ish, but because of COVID and everything, it's been delayed for a little while. But with their PoE 2 systems, they're reworking a bunch of stuff, and like that's already set at a slower speed than what it is in PoE 1 currently.
Okay.
And so they didn't want to have a steep drop-off between, you know, the last expansion for PoE 1 and PoE 2, because they put all this work into PoE 2, and everyone's going to be miserable when it's not the same. It's like pretty much the situation now, except when they're doing their big event, or like big expansion.
Okay.
But the other thing I forgot is that, like, all the changes, like the support gems and the Flask are the two main ones. There were issues with mana, which they fixed. So they also increased mana cost of support gem, or mana multiplier of support gems. Because like you have your base mana cost of your skill, and then each support gem increases it by some amount. And they increased all those because, you know, if you have to spend more mana, you have to wait for the mana to regen, and then that slows it down artificially.
Mm.
But I think the problem with introducing all these at once is that it inadvertently hurts, like, the niche or the not-as-strong builds much more than the top builds.
Is it kind of like how Urza Saga, the card, enabled all of those kind of fringe archetypes to actually work? And it would be like then taking that away from it being like, because it also made the best archetypes a little bit better. But then if you just took it away, those best archetypes would still be playable, but all the fringe ones that came up and were now playable all just completely died?
It's kind of like that.
Was that the analogy that you were going to use?
It's not. So the exact reason it hurts weaker builds more than it does stronger builds is that, so like you have less DPS, which means you can't kill monsters as fast, which means you're not getting your Flask charges regened as frequently. And then you have Flask down even more than what a top build does. And so you have to go even slower because you don't have as many Flask charges, and it just keeps on compounding. Whereas a fast build will just get their Flask charges back and use the Flask again, and it'll just keep going.
In World of Warcraft, I think it was during Wrath of Lich King, they completely reset the power level of the game. I'm pretty sure it was during Wrath of Lich King or just before. I don't know. Oh, it could have been. Anyway, in one of the expansions, I'm sure it was Wrath of the Lich King, they were like, this is actually a really, really hard thing to do. Like, to everyone who's screaming to have it done and stuff and get it done quicker or better or whatever, they were like, this is really, I remember them being like, it's really, really hard to do. You can't just turn it all down without everything breaking.
Yeah.
But then they did, and it seemed to work just fine. So I don't know, maybe that just goes to show that they really, really understood their mechanics of their game or something, because I remember hardly even noticing. I was just like, oh, all the numbers are 10 times down now. But anyway, because they didn't want you like hitting a boss for 600 million, you know.
Yeah, but I think in the long term it'll be fine. It's just now, I think someone aptly described it, there's two good descriptions that I've seen of it, is that there's obviously a lot of things not perfect with the game, which they're addressing with PoE 2. And people keep using PoE 2 as an excuse for them to not have to fix things until then, which is not the best. But it's like, as soon as one thing goes wrong, it's like, you just start complaining about everything that's wrong, because it feels bad, and if you complain about things, it feels better.
Yeah, Magic's taught us that.
Yeah, but the other thing, which was the analogy that I was thinking of, someone put a video on YouTube. I'm going to butcher the analogy, but the gist of it is that they lived between two different countries, and every time they would go back to this one country, every 6 or 12 months, whatever, there was a family-owned chili place that they went to. And so it was like the hottest chili ever compared to the other country they lived in. And progressively, as they went back and forth between the two countries, this chili place got more popular and more successful. But as it got more popular and more successful, it had to start catering to, you know, all these other people, like all the tourists who come to this country and can't handle the level of spice that all the locals are used to.
So they're like the noobs.
Yeah, right, pretty much. Yeah, okay. Anyway, yeah. So they have to like adjust the recipe for the chili and everything. And progressively it becomes like even bigger and even more popular. And they like branch out and make multiple stores. So now they're a chain and they're doing really successfully. And this person like goes back and reminisces about how his chili is just like not the same. And he's never going to get the original chili back that he has such fond memories of.
Okay.
And he's like, he understands that's the case. He's sad about it. But, you know, he's happy that the business has been so successful because it was originally a local business. He knew the people, whatever. And his analogy to Path, which is that, like, Path was originally this niche ARPG game, which was a really slow pace. I don't know if you're still looking up things on Google, you might be able to find a video from, like, 2013 where it takes, like, minutes to kill a mob. Whereas now it takes less than a second.
Okay.
And he's like, yes. I remember back in this day and it was good. So them slowing the game down now is still fine with me because I played back then and I was happy with it. But he feels for all the people who played like 2 or 3 leagues ago when it was all sub 1 second to kill a mob. And now suddenly it's changed.
Oh, wow.
That they lost their chili and they're really upset.
Yep. Oh, I see that makes sense.
Yeah, so it was a cool analogy.
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of also applicable to Magic, because, you know, we are here to talk about Magic sometimes.
Yeah, on that note, welcome to the Faction Podcast.
The Path of Exile Podcast. Yeah.
Nominally a Magic podcast, though I think we've dramatically loosened that title of late. This
is where you come for all your spiky tournament needs.
Absolutely. Kyle, do you remember when we started this podcast and it was us like analyzing metagames and talking in depth about the 75th card in Bant midrange?
I do remember. Those were good times.
It is interesting. Magic has had to do those sort of power level resets.
Yeah.
In our playing time, we had Ixalan, which I think was a big step back. Mm. Even more recently, Strixhaven and the D&D set have both been noticeably lower power level than Throne of Eldraine, and is something that at the moment I think it can make those sets feel lower impact, but we'll probably be glad of it when Throne rotates.
Yeah, and like can draw an analogy to like original Time Spiral, right, which like all the pros liked because it had so many different keywords and so many intricacies in the format.
Mm-hmm.
But like all the people who just play Magic casually, which is the majority of the player base, right, is that they just didn't appeal to them because it was so difficult. And now with Arena making so many more people play Magic, the chili is just not going to be the same.
Aww, I want my Magic chili back. Oh, man.
It's really interesting to me. I listened to the Resleevables recently, which, fantastic podcast, the second best Magic podcast out there, after us, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And Cedric and Patrick, they talked about Mercadian Masks recently, which was this exact thing. It was this huge step back in power after the Urza's Glock, which obviously is...
It seems like that's not hard to do. Yeah.
One of the more busted blocks in Magic history. And yeah, that idea that you sometimes just have to do these power level resets because otherwise like You can't just keep power creeping in your game if you want your game to have longevity.
No, you're exactly right, yeah. And that's, I think, the same idea that they had with World of Warcraft as well. It was just getting insane. You would, and all funny things happen. Like games, yeah, they do start breaking when power creep gets involved and stuff, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Absolutely.
So, I hit a wall in terms of DPS at T14. T14 maps, which then brought
how
me
many tiers does it go up to?
16. So, like,
ooh.
I am at pretty much the end game. I shouldn't be complaining too much, but I could clear tier 16 maps with my niche build before, and now I can't, and it makes me sad. So,
why don't you just play one of the good builds?
I did that for League Start, and I made a bunch of currency doing that.
Yeah, Kyle, just play the good deck.
Yeah. But yeah, I did that, and it was fun, but. So, the amount of experience to go up a level is also exponential. This is probably going into too much detail. And whenever you die, you lose 10%. And so at some point, you either have to play very carefully to not die, which I should probably be doing in the first place. But it's a different discussion between hardcore and softcore. But in general, like, you finish all the content with one character. And unless you're going to push for 100, which is a very different thing, it's more fun to reroll a new character once you've made a bunch of currency.
Yeah.
Which is what I did, but my second character, which was a really cool concept, I thought. But it's just, like, not quite there on damage. Like, it's T14, so it's obviously reasonable damage. But it just can't clear
everything. Are you being coy? Like, when you say reasonable, like, would it be extremely good compared to most people?
I suppose. It's, like, in the same sense that so many people play Magic casually, not many people get to the Pro Tour, right? So yeah. For between how many people play Path, how many people make to maps is already like a percentage, like 1% or something. It's probably not 1%, but it's a small number. So the people who make it to maps is small, and then the people who make it through those maps is also small. So I suppose it's also like it's good compared to what most people would do technically is true.
Okay, so a map's almost like seasons, and before that is the actual game.
Not really.
Okay, I'll just stop now. I hilariously, before we, it's not really hilarious, but before we started this podcast, I was just digging around and I watched some video of, I don't know why I thought of Diablo 3 and I put it into YouTube, and it was a video of a guy and he took all of his characters and put all of the gold or whatever it is and everything into making like one super character and played it in a hardcore season where if you die you lose everything, and he was playing in this video to his probably quite large following, and then like halfway through it the game just crashes and his character died and he was very sad. He was pushing for world number one apparently.
Wow. That's very upsetting for them, but it's one of the reasons I don't play hardcore. I just play softcore on Path.
Yeah.
I'm
like so next level into playing softcore that I'm currently looking at playing like just a farming simulator with my wife's sister. That's my life.
But yeah, that's probably going into too much detail about Path.
Yes.
The chili analogy was where I thought was a good point for it to be.
All right.
Relatable to everyone.
Yeah, all right. We'll put the chili analogy into the soundbite for all of the marketing we do for this show.
Yeah. That's right. Well, if there's not, I mean, it's hard with Magic. There's just not that much going on. There was some standard thing. I don't know. Nathan was saying there was a standard thing on Arena.
Oh, there was that. There was like the Arena. Was that an Arena Open or a qualifier? I don't know. Actually, the biggest tournament of the year was on this weekend, which was the Challenger Gauntlet
determined
who got into MPL and Worlds this year and who didn't. So, like, several people just, like, had their income assured for next year and several other people did not.
Yeah.
I didn't watch any of it. I've only seen bits and pieces from Twitter.
How have they got this so wrong? I mean... If you're talking about in franchise play, like, I'd have to be, like, guys like us, we would just have to be considered what they consider an in-franchise player. And if the biggest tournament just happened and none of us, well, I certainly didn't know about it. How's that even possible?
Yeah, I mean, I only know because I follow several of the, like, Magic Online grinders who were playing in it.
Okay. Yeah, I follow kind of my Twitter sphere is all Magic. Not that I do any, I don't ever write things on Twitter or do anything on Twitter, but I look at the feed and it's all just Magic stuff, but I didn't even know. Maybe it was hidden in there somewhere, someone talking about it, but wow.
Hmm.
There you go. Who won?
I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
Might have been Sam Party. Sam Party on Hushenbeth. And I think it was two Japanese players made top four.
Wow.
But I only saw that because Anna Hushenbeth made a tweet about how one of the Japanese players came to a list that was a couple of cards difference from theirs. And Anna did it with, like, I think his Haruya in, you know?
Good question.
And he was saying that they got to, like, almost identical lists, and presumably Anna had a much larger prep team helping him work it out. And so he was quite impressed with this Japanese player, and so I was also impressed. So oh, cool. I had a quick look, just because I thought it was really cool that, you know, someone who's potentially working on their own or with very few people could get to almost an identical list as a really big pro team.
Yeah, that's cool. I like the sound of that.
But that's as far as I know. I can't remember who else was in top 8 or top 12.
Wow. And so if that qualifies them for World, that means they get that 50 grand appearance fee, is that right? Or is that not the one that they've qualified for?
I've forgotten.
I think so, right?
For all your Magic the Gathering needs, the Faction Podcast.
So I've reached the point where I am no longer a Magic player, really. I will play in-person drafts.
Yeah.
And that's about it. I played one league. Actually, not even. So a long-time listeners of the podcast may remember that I was very into Underworld Breach in Modern. I played a lot of, like, Emry and Grinding Station and Mishra's Bauble decks with Thassa's Oracle in Modern.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a deck that someone posted and was talking about on my podcast that had basically that shell with all of, like, Ragavan and DRC and, like, Expressive Iteration, all of the sort of new really good blue-red cards.
Yes.
And that reminded me of a brew I had built with, like, basically that, but a Jeskai version with, like, some Monastery Mentors on the sideboard, some Teferis and Prismatic Endings. And I had actually paused my Mana Traders, and paused my subscription, and it got me to unpause it over the weekend and play a league with it.
How'd you go?
My experience with that, I played the first game and was like, well, that was kind of fun. I'm done now, though. I don't really want to play four more matches.
Oh, no.
played the second one, won that as well. That was good. That was either Friday night or Saturday. I think it was Saturday. And then I stopped playing. I came back and I played the matches on Sunday, basically just because I knew I needed to finish the matches to give my cards back to Mana Traders, because multiple times recently I had started a league on Monday, played a match or two, and then just not felt like playing Magic for the entire week, and gotten a message from Mana Traders on Sunday being like, please return your cards.
Oh man, like, this is actually reminding me, I'm on the Mana Traders site right this second, wondering how to cancel my subscription. Just literally reminded me to cancel it. Because I only got it because the Highlander tournament, and I haven't cancelled it since then. So I'm just trying to, because they don't make it easy to find the cancel button.
So on Sunday, I sat down and decided I'd play out the rest of my league. And I like had a close match in round three, I think, and lost. And then I like got crushed in round four, maybe. And I got to round five, and I got paired against Mono Blue Tron. Played game one, just completely punted to lose game one. I had the game winning combo, but they like floated mana. They had mana floating, so I went to pass to my next main phase so they didn't have the mana floating because they were otherwise tapped out. Except I was already in my second main phase and I just forgot.
Oh no!
So I just passed back to them. They untapped, played Mindslaver, and I just thought about it. And conceded the entire match. I was like, I actually just don't want to play this match. I don't even want to try and play games 2 and 3. I'm not that interested.
Yeah. Oh, man. Because when I did my Mountain Traders account, I was like, I need this for the Highlander tournament so I can play it. Then ended up just hardly playing that tournament at all because I could never match up the times correctly. And then played Vintage Cube. Now that Vintage Cube is over, I'm like, I have no need for a... Yeah, I don't play any format other than Cube and Draft. So it's kind of sad. Yeah, I didn't really even think of that when you said I'm not really a Magic player. We'll just play in-person drafts or whatever. That's pretty much where I'm at too. But I've been there forever. Like, I haven't played a game of Standard or Modern for like a year and a half. Or 2 years, 3 years now, whatever it is.
Yeah, this is different for me. Up till, I really like this year, I played a lot of Magic Online and I played fairly competitively, and I've just reached the point where it's like, Magic, the game, no longer interests me.
Oh, okay.
Which is so that's somewhat true. I think the real thing is the lack of organized play and the lack of attainable goals and things to build towards has just sapped all motivation for, like, long-term development, I guess. And so the actual games themselves are still fine-ish. I think Magic is generally fun. I've discovered that my attention span is not that big, which we'll get to. We'll talk about Pokemon Unite, but one of the big draws of that game is that each game is 10 minutes.
I've heard that said multiple times, but I've also heard it said that does it kind of get old pretty quick, or you're not experiencing that yet?
I don't think so. I've played... I don't think you can actually see on a Switch how many hours you've played, but I would guess... So it's been out for 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, I think. I would guess I have played 20 to 30 hours, probably.
It's about an hour a day.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Most of that.
Okay. So that's like six or so games a day.
Yeah, about that. Maybe a little bit more even, especially on weekends. Oh. So, and it has helped me.
I should say somewhere, because I accidentally saw it the other day, and I don't know where.
Right. Well, I don't have that on me. So
I remember the first time that I did the /played command in World of Warcraft and was like, okay, don't need to see that again. It's like an actual year of my life. Like, hundreds of days.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's the other thing, is that I feel like I don't have time to commit to more than one bottomless pit game, you know? And Magic is one of those games. All of World of Warcraft is like that. Path of Exile is like that. Magic can be like that. Pokemon Unite is like that. Where there is a theoretically limitless amount of time that you can pour into these games while still feeling like you are making progress and improving or whatever. It's not like... for example, I recently got Mario Odyssey on Switch, right? Theoretically, I'm going to play through that game and I'll finish the main storyline and maybe I'll go back and like 100% it, right? But there reaches a point where it's like I've done everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's not true of all of these other games that we're talking about, really.
Yeah, I almost exclusively play multiplayer cross-platform games with like my brother and wife, Georgie, and her sister, and there's a few other people in a kind of group that will play games like State of Decay, Sea of Thieves, like where you can all just go in for 10 minutes, or not 10 minutes, but you know, maybe an hour or two and do a bunch of stuff, and there's not any real deep progression, so to speak, because there's no way. Like, once you pass 30, man... Like, you've already got a job that's probably taking up most of your time and or kids. It's like, you don't need another job on the side of that again. Which is
what games
like World of Warcraft. It's literally having another job. Clock in every day and start doing, you know.
Yep, 100%.
Whatever the goals are, whatever you need to hit in the game. It's crazy.
That is a big change, right? This is the first year where I've had a full-time job rather than being a student. And it takes up so much more of your time. Mm. Whereas, you know... When I went to uni, I spent as much time playing Magic Online as I did studying, I think, for the most part.
Yeah.
And that was fine, but I can't do that now.
Yeah, exactly. I think probably up until I was like maybe 28 or something, I was kind of like pretty deep into, because I played a lot of like Oblivion, Skyrim, World of Warcraft, and I don't know what my, I mean, it must be in the thousands of hours across, you know, for each game, and for World of Warcraft, it's literal hundreds of days of game time, like full 24-hour days. Mm-hmm. But there's just no way I would try and do that. Like, it's crazy. Not a chance. Maybe get 1 or 2 hours a day. So very much games that don't have that kind of input requirement is what appeals to me, which is why stuff like Cube and Draft, to a lesser extent Draft, because with Draft you kind of need to learn the formulas. If Cube, you kind of get a good idea of what goes well in Cubes, and most Cubes, you know, at varying degrees of power level, somewhat same-ish.
I definitely agree with that. With Draft formats, there's that desire to learn the format well, and I felt that a bit in the couple paper Modern Horizons drafts we did, Modern Horizons 2 drafts that we did. I could feel a little bit of that draw of like, oh, this is an interesting format. And there's that draw of like, maybe I do a bunch of these drafts and I'll get to like learn all the intricacies of the format and that sort of thing, because that's, I think, when draft becomes really, really interesting. And I had to push back a little bit against that of like, actually, I don't really want to do that.
But is this my imagination as well, or are they killing that a little bit by, is it just an illusion, or have sets releasing more often now, or is that just some kind of illusion?
They sure are.
That's a good segue, Dan, unknowingly.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I was going to give you credit. I was going to say that was an intentional segue.
Oh, well, I was just kind of thinking, like, getting into a draft format, how on earth, I feel like the last one that I tried to kind of not master by any stretch of the imagination, but get into was Kaldheim. And it seemed like a lot of people at the time were playing Kaldheim. Somehow everything seemed to line up with, maybe it was lockdowns and everything, and it was, we'd come out of lockdowns, everyone was like raring to play paper, and it happened to be the draft format at the time, for whatever reason, that was the one I was playing. But then it was just like, next set, next set, next set, and you couldn't even start learning a set now before you're already getting bombarded with more spoilers. And it's like, what's the point of mastering this set? Because another one's just about like just around the corner.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I think they've definitely sped up the release cycle of sets and also of spoiler season, so that now the spoiler seasons overlap, and it's too much for me personally to keep up with, and it does lead to fatigue.
Yeah, the historic one, this Historic Horizons, but like I literally haven't even looked at it. I've listened to like one or two podcasts that I just listen to anyway because I like the personalities talk about spoilers for it and stuff. I'm like, that's like 700 cards or whatever. Like,
I think it's 1,000.
Oh, wow, really?
It was like, actually 1,000.
I'm not looking up 1,000 cards. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So now in my head, I'm like, if they're going to go do this with like these custom cards that are arena only or whatever, I'm like, you just go do that and I am not even going to bother. I just I haven't fired up arena for 12 months, probably more maybe now at this point. It's just, I could not be stuffed chasing the game in that way.
I got really into arena earlier this year, almost exclusively on my phone on the way to and from work.
Oh, that's right. I remember you did, yeah. And what happened to that?
So I did a lot of Strixhaven draft and I did a lot of Kaldheim draft. What happened is that we started working from home again, and I've been to the office once in the last 4 or 5 months.
Okay. Is that popular, the Arena Mobile? Like, did that work or is it not worked or...?
I haven't seen any stats on...
Do people play Arena Mobile?
I think the other thing, though, is related to that is that I've just started to value my time so much more highly, and the sort of, I guess, almost value over replacement of, will I enjoy playing this match of Magic? Yeah, I will, but I won't enjoy it more than, you know, all of the other things I could be doing instead. Is the thing.
Yes.
And that realization of like, actually, it's not enough to enjoy something anymore for me. I have to actually enjoy it more than the other things I could be doing with my limited time.
Yep. Which explains exactly why I do these multiplayer games with my brothers and sister and Georgie's siblings and stuff, because it's a chance for us all to hang out and talk, but also to just play a game.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and it's why I've loved the two paper drafts we got in around lockdowns recently, and
yeah, that was very good.
So instead, I've been playing Pokemon Unite, which is a, as I said, it's about three and a half weeks old, I think, now, and it's a Pokemon MOBA, so I think Dota or League of Legends or that sort of thing, but simplified, because it has a younger target audience, given it's Pokemon and it's on the Switch. It's also on the Switch, so it's played with like Switch controllers, so joysticks and like gamepads. It's a bit, and it's simplified mechanically compared to those other games. I've really enjoyed it, though. I think it has the potential to actually be a really complex, competitive game, where in comparison to League or Dota, it'll have less of an emphasis on your hands or your micro and more of an emphasis on macro decision making and teamwork, which I think is really interesting and is always, personally for me at least, is always what has interested me about primarily League is the game I watch, more so than, I guess, flashy outplays. So that's really interesting to me. Of course, that requires you to have a team, which is why I've been pestering Kyle and trying to drag Kyle into the game.
Oh, have you tried it yet, Kyle?
Yeah, yes, I started yesterday.
Okay, cool, yeah.
It's pretty good. I am not very good at using Joy-Cons.
What's a Joy-Con?
The D-pad and whatever.
Yeah, it's like the Switch
like an Xbox controller.
Yeah.
So.
No, I've played mostly PC games.
Yeah, me too. I've had to look up, just you saying it's on a Switch, I'm looking at now, the first time ever, looking what a Switch actually looks like. So I was like, what is a Switch actually? Because I've heard people talking about them. Okay, so it's like a phone.
Sure.
That's kind of also a controller.
Yeah. It's like small tablet size, but also they connect to TVs or, you know, like monitors.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. But yeah, missing a lot of skill shots because can't aim at all.
It's definitely has taken me some practice to get used to hitting skill shots with analog sticks, like a controller.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different from a mouse.
Hmm. But the gameplay, I'm looking at pictures of it now. I love the graphics. I love that style. That almost looks kind of like a painting, like cartoony paintings.
I think it looks fantastic. I think the game looks really, really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you need to know the Pokemon characters to play it?
Absolutely not. Okay. I don't know half of them.
Okay. Sweet. All right. Okay. Yeah.
I've played Pokemon games, like mainline games, with about half of these characters, about a quarter of them I recognize and I've seen before, and genuinely there are a few that I've never seen this Pokemon before.
Okay, yeah. Looks, yeah, I don't know, I've only heard positive things about it. It seems like a fine game.
Yeah, it's very interesting because it's very new, and it's obviously MOBAs are an established game type, so it's interesting to see what direction they take it in. So they've already had one balance patch and a couple of bug fix patches, which is fairly quick, and they've already introduced one more character. So there's 21 characters at the moment. They launched with 20 and they're up to 21 now, and so the expectation is there'll probably be another one in a week or two, maybe, is what people are hoping. So it will be interesting to see if they can keep up with that amount of new content. Obviously, it's Pokemon, so they have a huge library of potential characters create, to base off.
How many Pokemon are there?
Like 1,400 or something?
Oh, no shit.
Sounds about right.
Something like that.
It's probably also a number I should know.
And there's not quite that many that you could put in this game, because you can only put like evolutionary lines in, so like Charizard doesn't start as Charizard, it starts as Charmander. You have to evolve it by leveling up.
Okay,
so you can't put all 1,400 in, but you know.
All right,
I imagine they're probably not putting too many legendaries in either, right? Is it
No, so that's what's really interesting. Also, a lot of the Pokemon are in the game, but not as playable characters. So, like, Zapdos is the big boss, so it's, like, the Baron equivalent from League, or I don't know the Dota equivalent, yeah, but it's...
Trent would be very upset.
Yeah, sorry, Trent, I don't play Dota. It's, like, the big neutral monster that requires most of your team to take down and gives you this big benefit. Arguably too big at the moment, but that's... whole another discussion for our Pokemon Unite spin-off podcast once Kyle gets more into the game.
Yeah,
nice.
So that's cool seeing other Pokemon like that, or like you level up by fighting wild Pokemon primarily. So obviously that's all these other different Pokemon that aren't playable characters, but they are in the games.
Okay.
Which is cool to see.
And the feedback I'm hearing is a lot about it's either guys like us playing or you're playing against like 10-year-olds as well. Is that pretty much it? Or
there is a definitely, I mean, you can't tell because it's Pokemon, so I think there is voice chat, but it's kind of like a hidden away setting, so people don't really use it. They just use pings, right? And there's no text chat, which honestly is a good thing.
That I'm guessing that definitely is a good thing. Yeah,
it's definitely a good thing from playing League and getting flamed by, you know, people in solo queue. Absolutely a good thing, because now they're probably still flaming me, but like for the most part, you can't tell. Occasionally, you get people who will, like, emote spam you like they do in Arena. I've absolutely had an opponent when I was admittedly playing badly and died a couple times just spamming the, like, I need backup emote at me.
Wow. What a loser. Like, why would you do that? It seems so weird. I just, stuff like that just wouldn't affect me. I'd be like, what?
And I was like, okay, I mean, sure.
Yeah,
but there is definitely a mix, especially, it's probably not quite as bad now, but I started playing it right when the game came out, and those first few days, especially of ranked, in lower ranks, you could tell that some of the people playing had played, like, hundreds and thousands of hours of League or Dota or whatever, and understood just fundamentals of MOBAs and, like, positioning and team fights, and, you know, that the game is about actually beating minions and leveling up rather than just fighting the other team constantly. Okay. And then some people who were probably like, you know, 10 or 12 or whatever, and like, look at me, I'm Pikachu. And like, just didn't understand like how these games actually are won.
Yes. Okay.
So there's a bit of that. But theoretically, once you get higher and ranked it, that disappears a bit more. I'm now in the equivalent of gold. So like bronze, silver, gold, platinum, diamond, and then masters is it's called, which is the top. Open to
okay.
You.
And are you finding that this is where you may be hanging out for a while, or do you think you could smash past it? Or
I got stuck here. I got here a few days ago, a week ago, sort of thing, and sort of plateaued, but have now started climbing again, which is nice to see. I feel like I've watched a fair amount of streams, and it's sort of started to click some of the fundamentals. Because again, I have watched quite a lot of League, but I haven't played very much of it. So yes. Again, yep. I think I have reasonable macro sense of like, I should go here now or I should go there, but I'm not very good at like not dying.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and knowing how far I can push forward and that sort of thing. So sort of starting to learn that and feeling like I am actually starting to improve, which is a very cool feeling to feel like I am improving.
Will this game ever come out on PC?
Good question.
Just not even like...
Very good question. Comes out on mobile in a couple of months.
Yeah.
I don't know if it will ever come out on PC. Because I don't know how that can... Like, I don't know how it would go playing keyboard and mouse against joysticks. I don't know if you could have crossplay or...
I was going to say, I was surprised that it's kind of mobile. I didn't realize. I thought, like, apart from Pokemon... Go. Have Pokemon games exclusively been on a Nintendo console?
Good question. I don't know. I can't think of any examples of them not being.
Yeah. But I suppose, like, because Go is on mobile, maybe that's just like a trend that they want to move towards mobile.
It is designed like a mobile game. It's clearly designed with mobile in mind. It is only like you only have two abilities in an ultimate, essentially, instead of like four abilities in League, and you only have like one activated item, or like as opposed to two summoner spells, and it's definitely a bit simpler, and the 10-minute game time obviously leans towards mobile and its monetization, so it's a freemium game.
Yeah.
Like Arena.
Although, apparently you can buy whatever the currency is to upgrade items.
Yes, you can.
Just not ideal.
Yes. So the way that works, each Pokemon, when you play, you get to have 3 held items that give passive effects, and they can be leveled up from level 1 through to level 30. And to level them up, there's a currency you can use, and you can buy that currency. You also earn that currency at a decent rate. And at level 10 and level 20, the unique passive of the item gets upgraded. And then each level in between, it also, like, its base stats go up. So it gives a little bit more attack or something. But it's the unique passive gets upgraded at level 10 and 20. And to get to those levels, it's something like, it's like 81 of this currency to level 1 to level 10. And then 10 to 20 is 200, I think. Or either 200 or 500. And then 20 to 30 was like 3,000 or something.
Yeah.
So it's very achievable to get. And there's like 10 or 12 items or something. But if you play the same sorts of characters, you only need 3 to 5-ish. Like, for example, I don't even own any of the tank items because I don't play tanks. I don't really own any tank characters, for example. But it's quite achievable to get. It's very, very achievable to get everything to 10. And even after that, it's pretty easy to get everything to 20. I have half a dozen items at 20, and like I have a lot of currency anyway, for example, and I've not bought anything. Well, that's not true. I bought some characters because I'm impatient and didn't feel like grinding and just wanted to try the different Pokemon, but
it's understandable because apparently it's also capped at 2,000 coins per week.
Yes, although coins aren't the currency you use to buy item upgrades.
No, not for
item. They are the ones you use to buy Pokemon.
For characters, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so. But frankly, it's a free game and the characters are also like $6 to $7. So I think I bought like 3 characters. So I spent like $20 on this game that I've put, you know, 30 hours into in like 3 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
Which seems totally fine. And I won't.
That seems like a good rate.
Yeah, and I like won't spend more money probably on it. Which seems totally fine to me.
Hmm. I think if you are in a position where you are spending more money on it, you're probably getting a decent amount of joy from it.
Hmm.
Yeah, or you're buying a bunch of cosmetics or whatever, which is honestly, I think, a reasonable way to set up your game. But it is very much catered towards mobile players with microtransactions and also to whales.
Yeah, my view around what a game is supposed to cost has become so fucked up because of Magic. Like, it's yes. Like when I see a game on Steam, it's like the Ultimate Edition with everything is like $160. I'm like, that's it? Like, there's like, that's like one card.
Like, oh god,
you know what I mean? Like one piece of cardboard. Like, it's just ridiculous. What, you know, like people sitting there. I think in faction chat recently, they were debating the merits of some. I think it was, I don't know, Scrubland or something.
There's been a lot of chat about original jewels. A lot of people posing jewels in our chat.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Do you guys reckon this one's worth closer to 800 or 900? I'm like, man, this is like 35 above. You know, for the most part, above intelligent. You know, people discussing the merits of buying a $900 piece of cardboard.
I know. You know what's really funny? So when I was 13, when I first got to high school, I started playing Warhammer 40K.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's more expensive than playing like standard Magic, I think.
Yeah, wow, really? Yeah, I've and heard then that I've, actually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then when, so like, I started playing Magic at like 15, 14-ish. And then that, you know, it seemed like, oh, wow, this is so much cheaper than Warhammer. This is, you know, a 15-year-old with very little income.
Yeah.
And now at 23, I'm basically like, I think I'm done buying Magic cards. I'm just going to stick to video games and spend $20 on Pokemon Unite.
Yeah, I mean, to bring it back to the amount of spoilers and stuff, like, it does get a bit like that, even if you're doing things like, you know, trying to maintain a cube or, you know, you want cards in certain ways and stuff. It's just like, far out, the amount of releases and products and ways you can have every single card and blah, blah, blah. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's just off the charts. I hope they know what they're doing. I hope they don't burn everyone out. But
we'll yeah, see. I mean, the thing is, though, even if they burn everyone out, all those cubes will still survive and
they people will
keep playing Highlander and stuff. Like, Magic could literally die and, like, Wizards could completely fold tomorrow. And that wouldn't actually stop us from drafting cubes.
You're exactly right, you know, and that's with this whole, like, historic 1,000 cards that aren't in any other format, or however many of them aren't in any other format and mm-hmm. will never be in paper. I'm actually at this point, like, I don't even, like, care. Just give me my cube, and that's kind of all I need.
I just don't care, and I have no reason or need to engage with that area yeah. of Magic at all. There's no impetus for me to care about all those cards getting put into Historic, because I'm never going to play the format, and I have no need to or no interest to, and it doesn't affect my, you know, Friday night cube.
Exactly. It really is. Someone explained, like, someone was frothing at the mouth, of course, because it's Magic about it, and someone else was explaining to them, it's kind of like, I don't know, Magic Jewels or whatever, or those weird starter cards on Arena that don't exist anywhere else. And it's like, think of them like those. It's Arena, they're decoupling it. It's effectively becoming, especially Historic, it's basically another game. It's like, here's this version of the game that you love. Just like you don't hear anyone complaining about the board game Rivals of Ixalan or whatever, like being like,
yeah,
well, why can't the board? Do I have to bring a board to every Highlander game now in case someone plays Rivals of Ixalan card or whatever? Like, I don't know. It's just like, that's how you've got to think of Historic and Arena, I think, now, is that's a game called Magic the Gathering Arena, and then there's also Magic the Gathering in paper, and I think they're really maybe trying to just decouple those two things. And I thought I'd care more, but I legitimately just couldn't give two shits. Like, don't want to look at the list, just don't care. Not playing Historic, just don't care.
It's actually very freeing to have reached a point where I can comfortably sit there and go, actually don't care. And yeah. I'm very happy to just distance myself and not let it affect me.
Yeah, exactly. At this point, it's like, if there's a new set to draft, you know, with mates, of course, I'll draft whatever the set is. I probably won't ever go deep on a set, but that's just because of time. But I will always want to draft it with friends. And then with the Vintage Cube, as they add new cards in, I'm like, cool, those are the cards I need to get. So I'll go get those cards. Yep. And that's pretty much it. I think I found a Highlander deck with Isaac's Academy build that I just love. Hopefully that remains viable. It was greatly improved with Modern Horizons. So as long as that stays viable, I can just do that and forget about Arena and Adventures of the Lost Dungeon or whatever it's called. I don't even... It's just too much. Stop. Have you, like, have either of you guys drafted that set? Because it's out, isn't it? It's like, it's been out for a while.
I drafted it a lot for a while.
Oh, you did? Okay, cool.
I did the thing, because I was quite into it for the first week or so.
Please don't tell me that we had discussions about you drafting this and I've just completely forgotten. I don't think so.
I think someone has.
I definitely talked to Trent about it on a podcast at one point.
I remember very little input.
Yeah, Kyle was there.
I don't think I was there for that.
Maybe not.
It was like not a particularly good limited format, and I just, again, it's not that interesting to just draft on my phone with none of my friends there.
The faction podcast where we realize we all hate Magic.
on Arena drafting, it's interesting that they have so many sets. But only one set that... I think it's like one or two sets that you can only ever ranked with. I saw someone complaining about that. Because they were complaining about how AFR got stale so quickly. And they're like, we have all these other sweet sets that, you know, you were showing us cards weeks or days or weeks ago. And now they're just not relevant. So thanks for that.
Yep.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Yeah, that is... Yeah.
The key there, Kyle, is that I don't care about ranked anymore because I've given up trying to qualify for these qualifier weekends. Okay. So.
Alright, if that's the case, then everything's great.
It is actually, though, because that's the thing. You talk about how, I mean, we're talking about how we've just chosen not to care about Historic Horizons or whatever the hell the set's called, right? And the thing is, like, 6 months ago or 12 months ago, I wouldn't have had that luxury because I was still playing competitively, so I had to know how to play Historic, and I had to be prepared to play Historic at a qualifier weekend. Yeah, but now I've given up on that dream. That dream doesn't exist, and so I just don't have to follow it anymore.
Kind of liberating, but also kind of content sapping for our Magic podcast.
It is, yeah, yeah. It's very liberating for me. It does make running a Magic podcast challenging.
Yeah, but here's the thing as well, Ian, like, you just don't know. In 6 months' time, you may be so deep into a format and playing it 10 hours a day. Like, you just don't know.
Yep.
You know, just because right in this given moment, you're not, you know, crazy into Magic or whatever, it doesn't mean it won't come back. Like,
it's true.
Magic has proven, you know, not just year on year, like literally decade on decade, that it's a game that has staying power. So I highly doubt that just because right in this moment you're not feeling it, that's going to continue forever.
It's absolutely true, you know. If hypothetically we get our lockdown and a new game store opens up where I want to play FNM and want to play competitive paper events, then maybe that'll drag me back in.
Who knows? Me too. Yeah, I don't know. And I feel like that's kind of what happened during Keldheim as well. We just come out of whatever huge lockdown we were in at the time, and it was like, wow, we can all play.
Absolutely.
Well, awesome.
With Keldheim, because then we had we got that like 2 months worth of competitive events at Good Games in Greensboro.
Yeah, that's right.
And that was why I was like, oh, I'm so into Keldheim, I'm going to draft a bunch, I'm going to learn the format. Purely for like that basically those few weekends.
Yes, exactly. So I would take anything said during a major lockdown with a massive, and especially now where we're kind of getting this like lockdown fatigue where it's multiple lockdowns, and even when you come out of one, you kind of know you're going straight back into another.
It's funny you say that, yeah. Because like lockdown 5 was like, oh, we've got this. This will be, it won't be that long. It'll be like 2 weeks. It's fine. I've done this before. Going into 6 after 10 days out of lockdown, it just feels completely different.
You are spot on. Yeah, it's now all of the, let's not become a COVID podcast, but yeah, everything, the point of that is just that you don't necessarily know if that could also be affecting your opinion on playing competitive Magic. But certainly, I don't know. Arena, I don't know what happened with me in Arena, and it kind of like bugs me because I actually think it's a fine program. If I could play Vintage Cube on Arena, that would be greatly preferable to Vintage Cube on Modo. Like, not that I particularly, I don't actually mind Modo. What I'd love about Modo is that without animations, like if someone casts Damnation, you don't have a counter spell up and you're passing priority, everything just disappears in front of you. Like, it's like, okay, cool, that's done, on to the next thing. Like, you know, what else, what I need to do to rebuild? Whereas games like Hearthstone, Arena, they really like do the rub-ins where it's like everything burns up in front of you, and it's like, ah, your board that you used to have is not here anymore, you know, and which can somewhat increase the salt. But seriously, if they had like, I just don't see, maybe there's not enough cash, or maybe they know that the players who want Vintage Cube are already just playing it on Modo and always will, but it's 540 cards, for Christ's sake. Like, there was 1,000 cards just added to Historic. How do they not just... All they have to program is how those 540 cards interact with one another, and they're done. And then they just keep Vintage Cube constantly up on Arena, and everyone's playing Arena at good times. You know, $10 or $15 a pop for every league. I don't know. That seems like that'd be a good idea. Do you reckon more people play Vintage Cube when it comes on? Like, how messed up do I have the numbers in my head here? What would be the proportion of people playing Vintage Cube when it's on compared to how many people are playing Historic?
I truly cannot tell you. I do think the barrier to entry for Magic Online is much higher than Arena. just like installing the game and stuff.
Just editing the code of your computer, like, going to the system updates.
Look, Magic Online's not a super user-friendly interface, you know?
No, it's not. But really, once you kind of get the hang of it, it's really like 3 buttons, 1, 6, and your mouse. Like, that's
well, yeah, but it. Once you get the hang of it, but like, I mean, Magic Arena doesn't even have a Magic Online doesn't even have a tutorial.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't. How did I? I wonder how I learned. Oh, you can just learn from doing mistakes, don't you? You're like, yeah. Oh, and for some of them, there's particular cards where you're like, I've played this card before and know that.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's like Frantic Search. You cast Frantic Search and it's like, it doesn't make it abundantly obvious that you now is the time to untap your lands, for example.
Yeah, I love lands, untap up to 2 lands. Oops, I didn't click any of my lands.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, okay, cool. So pass priority to the land part and it's like their turn and you're like, oh, no. So you kind of have to learn, I guess, whereas you would hope that on Arena, I think it would come up and say, now you can untap your lands or whatever, you know.
So I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, where's the money going? Because that's, you know, this is the whole thing, right? Like, Wizards can see the trail of money. They know what's actually selling and what's not. Yeah, I mean, because when you Vintage Cube, right, you're, like, these last couple of weeks, where it's been on for me, like, I've been almost in every waking minute of non-work or family-related time just jamming just draft after draft after draft after draft after draft.
And how have your results been, Dan?
2-1, baby. It's the best I can get is 2-1. I've come to realize that that is where I've peaked as a player, is about that 2-1. The good thing is that I get a lot of 2-1s, which, as Trent and others have pointed out, like, that's a 66.7% win rate if that's what you were actually always getting. But clearly I'm not always getting 2-1. It's just that I peak at 2-1. I would say most drafts in Vintage Cube I go 2-1. There is some secret sauce that I'm missing to get that elusive 3-0. I build sometimes what would be considered and are commented on to be almost nut decks, you know, in whatever the archetype is. So I don't know if it's a play thing then, if it's not a drafting the deck, but it's more playing the deck, seeing the lines, something like that. But for whatever reason, it's like, get that first game, smash it, second match, smash it, and then the third match, third game, every time, just something goes wrong. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, come on, like, how can this be so hard? Yeah, I think I've trophied like once or twice before, but just constant 2-1s. But yeah, it's been a good season. I thought it was a good season of Vintage Cube. The cards that they added, they had a massive change log this time. It must have been 20 plus cards. But all of them really good. The ones they took out, there's not a whole lot that I was like, oh, don't take that out. I think they do a pretty good job of maintaining it. And I had a blast for the whole time. And to be honest, I mean, I say that like I'm not as interested in Magic as I've been in other times, but it's kind of just for lack of the things that I want to play. Like, if it was on right now, I'd probably be logging off this podcast to go play right now. You know, like, it's just so good.
Yeah. Well, there are other cubes, right? Because they're doing Cube Spotlight Month, so they're putting on a different cube every week.
Yeah. Yeah, I could get behind that, but then it's just like sometimes learning a new cube.
That's fair.
Especially if it's, you know, pretty unique, which I think whenever they do those spotlights, they try and use relatively unique ones. I don't know. What have they got there right now? See, this is the thing. Like, Vintage Cube goes away, and I haven't even logged back into Modo, so I don't even know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's the Bant Cube at the moment.
Okay. I can somewhat get... I prefer Grixis or Esper Cube to Bant, but I could probably get behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, it seems like me and many people... I mean, with the amount of trophies you see people getting, they must be playing an insane amount, unless they do a Cedric Phillips and get 8 trophies in a row without dropping a single match, which is just...
Let's go force mono white.
Yeah. Well, I did that. And I did, towards the end there, I did do 2 mono white drafts. I just forced it twice. First time, 0-3. Second time, 2-1, of course. But... I mean, I guess that just shows the chasm between truly good players and just
filthy casuals, like the idea of ever getting a trophy is like, I'm jumping around the room like, wow, I finally did it, a trophy. Whereas for him, he's like, cool, on to the next trophy, which will come in less than an hour.
Yeah.
Like the people that end those things with 30 plus trophies, like I'm thinking, you must play all day long. Like you must seriously play for 15 hours a day. You know, I don't like, can you have a job and get 30 plus trophies in 2 weeks? That's crazy. I guess you could play every single night and get 2 trophies.
Yeah, you have to get 2 trophies a night.
Yeah, but that seems almost impossible, so I don't know. Oh, yeah, so it's Autumn Burchett's Band Cube is now live in the limited play lobby. All right, cool.
Yeah, so that's what's been going on in our lives, magic and otherwise. Thank you for listening to the Faction Podcast this week, our combined Path of Exile, Pokemon Unite, and some magic towards the end, actually. We got there.
Thanks, everyone. Glad you could join us for the ride. I'm off to play Farmville.
Bye, Kyle.